Welcome to the Film on the Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:49 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 25th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what really has been an extremely exciting week. And this week has been dominated by the energy markets. And certainly, the fact that there was a holiday in the US on Monday meant that when Wall Street opened up again on Tuesday, the events that had happened in Libya over the weekend and on Monday had a knock-on effect, and there was a really quite a large drop on Wall Street that also transferred into well, followed through with another additional drop on a number of European indices on Tuesday, and a number of commodities were also limit down. The wheat, corn, soybeans, rough rice, cotton were all locked limit down on Tuesday, and in fact, cotton had been limit down on Friday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The fact that oil had rallied by yesterday afternoon, the Brent contract had hit $120, pulled right back from that level, and by the close finished closer to 110, and a similar story on West Texas Intermediate. So that was, at least in part, on the one hand, this has been driven almost exclusively by speculation. And I can say that with a reasonably high degree of confidence because there hasn't been any commonality right across the energy sector. Ancillary markets, such as the gasoline market and the heating oil market, have both rallied in sympathy with oil, but coal, uranium, natural gas, they haven't rallied at all. So this is a speculative-driven rally that we're seeing in the oil price right now. And when you have such a large move and that's been driven by speculation, you need the crisis to be seen to be getting worse. And the crisis didn't get worse yesterday because Saudi Arabia announced that it was going to fund a rather expensive new social program. And it also said that it would make additional supply available. So we don't actually have a supply shock in oil right now. What we have is a threat of a supply shock. And when the situation eased somewhat yesterday, oil prices pulled back. Now, this is still a crisis that could potentially become a problem for oil supply with Colonel Gaddafi not yet having stepped down. But it's a developing crisis. And given the fact that supply is not a true problem, then there is potential for this to have eased, and that's exactly what has happened with Saudi Arabia's intervention. So while the majority of markets were really quite weak in the early part of this week, they've finished out the week in much better stead. So into the end of this week, Wall Street is up about 1%. The Nasdaq today is up 1.5%. The Canadian market is up a third one on one and 1/3%, and most of the European markets are pretty similar, as indeed is much of Asia. In the early part of this week, the majority of trading was characterized by people taking money off the table. And certainly the anxiety level has risen. When one looks at stock markets, they've all bounced in here today to one extent or another. But most of North America and a good part of the core Eurozone area is really quite overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. And even though this has been limited to what could be termed a similar sized reaction, particularly compared to November. The fact that anxiety levels have risen, that oil prices are now at a substantially higher level than they were back in November, and the fact that so many of these markets are overextended, it does raise the significant potential that the next big move is likely to be a reversionary process to a trend mean such as the 200-day moving average, rather than a replica of the same type of move we've had since November, which really was very impressive. So there is a strong likelihood that we're moving into a more reactionary type environment for some of those markets that have become overextended. And best case scenario, that they spend some time ranging and allow that moving average to catch up. We've seen exactly that process happen in a number of Asian and Latin American markets since November. The Indonesian market is an excellent example, because that had a relatively shallow reaction back in April when Wall Street and much of Europe went through a rather large reaction, which held the market up for at least 6 months. But back in April, much of Asia, or the Asian region, sorry, had a relatively sharp, shallow pullback, found support in the region of the 200-day moving averages, and then exploded to the upside and had a remarkably good performance in most of 2010. And they've been consolidating since. Most of them have completely unwound their overbought conditions relative to the 200-day moving average, and they're showing signs that they're beginning to find support. So while oil prices are certainly an impediment, and there are attacks on consumption just about everywhere, and oil prices affect the less developed countries more because there's a higher percentage of income gets spent on energy prices and indeed commodities generally, that's going to be a headwind. But they've already had the pullback and consolidation, and it is increasingly looking more like how long it's going to take them before they can get back up to those November highs and reassert their medium-term uptrends. And what commodity prices do is likely to have a major bearing on those developments. This has also been an interesting week from the perspective of what's happened with safe havens. And the US dollar in particular has not strengthened. So while oil has obviously been the number one hedge against what's been against this crisis, and gold has been pretty steady and it's finishing out the week in the region of $1,410, which is this is the fourth time since November that gold has pushed above the $1,400 level, and it hasn't liked it above this area for the last three occasions, but it's held above $1,400 for the last 3 days. And considering the increased anxiety, and particularly with inflationary pressures rising, and that those are stemming from most commodities, then that's a generally bullish environment for gold. So there's no reason to suspect that on this occasion gold will not hold above that $1,400 level. And in attempting to take the double negatives out of that sentence, it's looking increasingly likely that gold will sustain its move above $1,400. But the US dollar has not strengthened. And that's a departure from other crises that we've seen and other periods of high anxiety in stock markets. The US dollar has classically been the safe haven currency, and it's not like any other currency hasn't strengthened this week, because the yen, the Swiss franc, the Singapore dollar, the Swedish krona, the Norwegian crown, they've all been really quite firm this week, and actually so has the South African rand, which has one of the higher interest rates out there. But the US dollar has not strengthened. Now, that could be attributed to the fact that Wall Street has had a relatively shallow reaction to date and rallied rather well in here today. Or it could also be that bigger questions are being asked about the integrity of the US dollar, and being asked whether there is any real plan to combat the fiscal deficits. And the amount of debt that's outstanding and the kind of deficits that exist at a state level are also quite an obstacle to growth. So these are big problems, and some substantial solutions are going to have to be proposed before people really start to have some faith that the US dollar is going to hold its purchasing power. Because right now, the weak US dollar is in the best interests of the USA. And They don't appear to be in under any, they don't, they're not exhibiting any great desire to support the currency. We're getting back to a rather interesting area on the dollar index, because that dollar index bottomed nearly 2 years ago. It's held a progression of higher reaction lows since, and the most recent of those is in the region of 75, and it's currently at 77. And below 75, if it breaks that progression of higher reaction lows, that's when you would start to get people talking about a dollar crisis. So it's not that far off it right now, and there seem to be a good number of other currencies that could potentially offer a safe haven, and the US dollar isn't really one of them right now. And while one can certainly make an argument for why the Japanese yen shouldn't be a safe haven currency, that certainly hasn't affected the demand for the currency during the current period of heightened anxiety. So this is a warning shot for the US dollar, and that's not something that we can ignore, given the fact that this is a period of heightened risk in here. What we are also seeing is that US Treasuries did attract some bullish interest. Now, we've had a failed downside break. It's taken out an MDL stop, and we're right back up to the 122 point level, and that's pressuring the upper side of what had been an overhead range. There's nothing to say that US Treasuries are not going to go on and hit an additional high in here or break out of this little range. So this period of anxiety is also creating demand for a traditional safe haven, such as US Treasuries or indeed gilts or bunds, and just about all sovereign or highly rated sovereign debt. The potential supply problem that we have in the oil market is causing anxiety, but we have a very real supply problem in the grain and bean complex. Supply can't easily be increased in this area, and this has been a pretty terrible 18 months for global agriculture. Excuse me. So the reactions that we've seen in some of these grains and beans have been relatively similar sized. They're volatile by their very nature, and they appear to be finding support in here. So the potential for agricultural commodities to continue to push higher is really quite real. And while the move in oil has certainly been stoked by speculation, it's not just speculation that is pushing these agricultural prices higher. There is a real shortage, and again, that supply issue isn't something that's about to disappear overnight. So the inflationary pressures that have been building in the global economy, stemming from commodity prices, are not just going to go away. And the spike in oil that we had earlier this week is perhaps emphasizing the inflationary pressures that have been building in the commodity complex for a while now. We've talked about commodity prices being an opportunity, but also being the source of the next big problem. And we've been talking about that for a while now, with copper having found support in the region of $4.25, and it's almost back up towards $4.50 in here today, that you're seeing industrial metal prices finding support, and they also had a rather sharp pullback earlier this week. You've had the agricultural commodities pull back sharply, but also finding support, and that's supportive of this wider inflationary pressure that is building. Central banks have been procrastinating on raising interest rates, and They've been justified in doing that because the velocity of money has been really quite low, particularly in the USA and in Europe. And they haven't needed to raise interest rates. They haven't needed to pull back their supply of money. And the inflation that is building, provided it doesn't lead to higher wages, will help to control the amount of debt that they'll have to pay back. It certainly won't be in the same dollars that it was issued in, and indeed euros or yen or pounds. So they've been waiting to raise interest rates, and asset markets have done spectacularly well over the last 2 years. But interest rates are most likely going to start rising at some point this year, and they will need to start rising if they're going to attempt to choke off inflation before it starts to become a problem. The global economy is also recovering, and it's being led higher by Asia and Latin America, and particularly the population centers of Asia. And perhaps the most important statistic at the moment is that GDP growth is outpacing population growth by a wide margin in the world's population centers. So they are not only the centers of global growth, but the size of the middle class is increasing in those areas, and that's what's creating the source of additional demand for all of these commodities. Per capita consumption of commodities is rising. The supply inelasticity meets rising demand theme that we've talked about at Fuller Money since at least 2003 had a bit of an interlocution during 2008, but it's back in force now, and it's probably been emphasized even more because the choking off of credit for new supply is being felt really quite acutely right now. So it's going to be a few years before significant new copper supply hits the market, and that's what's helping to support prices. And of course, speculators are playing their part in this advance, but it's not because there isn't a fundamental reason that is helping to support prices. The centers of global growth are also increasingly the centers of, or they are centers for improving governance. And we've been talking more about the difference between progressing and regressing markets rather than emerging and developed markets for a while now, because the developed and emerging classification doesn't leave any room for countries that are either deteriorating in terms of their fiscal position and their standards of corporate, civil, economic, and regulatory governance, and those that are improving. And there is no doubt that the leaders in global GDP growth have some of the best demographics. The Asian region, in particular, learned its lessons from the Asian financial crisis and has deleveraged and are running surpluses and have focused on manufacturing and improving the lives of their citizens. And China particularly has raised hundreds of millions of people out of poverty in the last 20 years, and India is attempting to do the same thing right now. And China and India are fast learners. And the crisis that has developed in the in North Africa and the Middle East is a demonstration of what can happen when an administration fails to improve the lives of its citizens enough to keep them happy. Because most large population countries in the Middle East, Asia, and Latin America have vast young populations, and they're now at an age where they're entering the workforce, starting their own families, looking for food, shelter, and an income. And the countries that have the highest GDP growth are the ones that are catering for this, that are positioning themselves to benefit most from the demographic dividend. And the failed states that are developing in North Africa are the ones that failed to position themselves to cater for this huge growth in their population. And this isn't a trend that's going to disappear. The one trend that we can be in the absence of an extinction comet hitting the planet is that young people are going to get older. And that's something that's going to be a headache for planners in just about every developing or progressing country for the foreseeable future. Per capita consumption of commodities is a secular theme. Increasing per capita consumption of commodities is a secular theme. And that is helping to drive demand for just about everything. It's creating opportunities, it's also creating problems. But it's something certainly that the global economy is going to have to get used to. We are on a new inflationary trajectory. US Treasury yields have been falling for the last 30 years and are showing bottoming characteristics. When we adjust commodity prices for inflation, then most commodities trended lower for the last 30 years and have now rallied to break 30-year inflation-adjusted downtrends. The bottom of a downtrend is the beginning of a new uptrend, and that would suggest that we've seen an explosion in the supply of bonds over the last few years. We've seen countries like Mexico rush out and issue 100-year bonds and sell out of them. We've seen companies rushing out to lock in ultra-low yields because they believe that they will not see such low yields again in the medium term. And we've seen governments take on massive private debts, issue vast quantities of bonds, push yields to extraordinary lows, and all against a background of higher commodity prices and higher wage demands in much of Asia and Latin America. Now, wage inflation isn't likely to be a significant problem in the USA or much of Europe, and particularly peripheral Europe, for really quite some time. But wage inflation in China, in India, in places like Indonesia, Brazil, is very real. So we've been through a 20 to 30 year period where Asia in particular exported disinflation. The outsourcing of labor to China in particular helped to drive down the cost of manufacturing goods everywhere. And wages are now starting to rise in China. So where they once exported deflation, they are now exporting inflation. We're likely to never see such cheap manufactured goods again. It could be, I expect to be in my dotage and be telling stories about how cheap things used to be. So we're in a new inflationary cycle, and Asia is likely to be exporting inflation, and that's a point that was made in Lorenzo Draghi's speech to the Goldman Sachs's macroeconomic conference a couple of days ago, and you'll find the link to that speech in comment of the day today. It's well worth reading. So we're in a new inflationary cycle. That means that long-dated government bonds are going to be a terrible investment over the long term. They'll provide a certain amount of safe haven status during crises, but when the crises passed, they're going to be excellent shorting opportunities, and that's likely to be the case for a considerable period. And 10 years from now, there will be people who have made their careers from shorting government bonds. That would suggest that commodity prices are also a reasonably good hedge for inflationary pressures. Investing in commodities outside of managing a futures account is rather difficult, particularly for some of those trackers which have the interest rate fee, the management fee, and the contango fee to contend with. And when prices go through intermittent pullbacks, then you get some additional leverage to the downside, which can destroy a long-term investment in some of those tracking funds. I personally believe that people just do not read prospectuses, because if they did, they wouldn't buy half of these leverage products that are being purveyed as safe investments over the last few years. But when we look at the inflationary pressures that are building out there, and we're certainly not going to have all of the inflation all in one go, and it took 30 years to unwind from the last big inflationary spike, and certainly inflation is likely to be a problem in the short term, but this is a new cycle we're going to have, and it's going to ebb and flow. And certainly inflationary pressures are rising at present, but that's not always going to be the case, and what is likely to unfold is that when inflation becomes less of a problem, then the diminishing inflationary pressures that unfold will not bring us back to an area where we are even today. And that again is a secular theme. So there are a number of major investment themes ranging from the inflation that is coming from commodities and being exported from Asia, from Asian to Asian and Latin commodity producing Latin American growth. And there's going to be a number of different ways of playing that, because the capital markets of the USA and Europe are really quite deep, and they are home to myriad companies that are leveraged to growth in the global economy. And of those, there are a significant number that offer an attractive yield. And yield is going to be something that is going to be increasingly hard to come by, particularly yield that can outpace inflationary pressures. And that's going to be a continuing theme at Fuller Money, because companies that have growth or investments that offer leverage to global growth and an attractive yield are going to be gold dust in an inflationary environment. And that's become an increasingly important theme at Fuller Money. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but wish all the best to all of you.